This is Bristol Bay and Beyond, KDLG's weekly news magazine. It's Friday, March 31st. I'm your host, Dave Benninger. Thanks for joining us this week, where March is going out like a lion after coming in like so sweet a little lamb. Coming up, we'll get reaction about the proposed Dillingham to Manicotic Road.
I'm all for it. I'm excited and I'd like to see it go through. And we're hoping that we could get some federal funding for the project.
Sitka Sound's herring fishery wrapped up its short season this week. Togiak herring is now not far off, and it looks like participation will be up and maybe the price too.
We're going to have, I think, 19 seine boats. And last year we only had 3 gill netters, so we're going to have 16 gill netters. I'm hearing rumors of $100 to $150 a ton.
Plus, the annual recital of the Bristol Bay 4-H Ballet Club happens tomorrow. We'll take you for a behind-the-scenes look at the little leotard-wearing dancers enjoying a popular activity done on a shoestring budget.
It's so fun to see the girls and boys out in the community. We're so excited for ballet.
Those stories and more are coming up after a look back at some of this week's news. 59-year-old Tom John, a village administrator in Newtok, did not come back from a seal hunting trip off the coast Sunday, and following an extensive two-day effort, the search was officially suspended Tuesday night. John had dragged a kayak down the beach by snow machine Sunday afternoon. His machine was found, but there was no sign of John or the kayak. The U.S. Coast Guard and Civil Air Patrol logged 41 hours and covered 9,400 square miles. State trooper and volunteers scoured the coast on the ground. At its monthly meeting Monday night, the Naknek Electric Association announced it had filed a lawsuit against its former manager, Donna Vukic. NEA says Vukic charged close to $1 million of personal expenses on the company credit card over 12 years, and negotiations to recoup that money have stalled. Board President Nancy Morris-Lyons says Vukic's alleged accounting scheme to hide her trail was simple but ingenious.
From the management level down, the only person that was seeing or knowing that that money was not spent on the things it was being coded for was the manager herself. So it was, I've always said I want people to learn from this and hopefully save others from the same predicament.
Vukic's attorney did not respond to requests for comment this week. The Bristol Bay Borough Police has requested the assistance of the FBI in investigating possible criminal charges. At its annual member meeting, Nooshigat Cooperative Board President Pete Andrews said the co-op is narrowing its search for a new chief executive.
As you guys all know, we're recruiting for a CEO. We're just about closed, and I think we're going to probably go into interviews in a couple of weeks with a couple of candidates. I'm not going to say who's in the hopper, but I think we've got a couple of good guys there that may serve us well.
Formerly retired CEO Mike Megley has been serving as interim since the fall when the board fired Nancy Favors. Pete Andrew and fellow incumbent Chris Napoli were both voted back into another term Tuesday, and newcomer Susie Jenkins-Brito edged out two other candidates for a seat on the board. Standardized state testing got underway in Alaska this week. After moving between different exams, this year students are using the Performance Evaluation for Alaska Schools, or PEAKS. And in Dillingham, students are taking it the old-fashioned way, using pencil and paper. Elementary principal Nick Schollmeyer said that was to try and avoid the technical difficulties testing by computer.
The last 2 years, put a lot of time into setting up schedules and making sure that we had all the equipment we needed up and running. And this year, even middle way through January, we still didn't know what the requirements were going to be. And so we decided our best bet would be paper and pencil this year, knowing that if we had a paper and pencil test, it couldn't fail us.
Last year, the Kansas-based AMP testing was cut offline when a fiber cable was accidentally severed, crippling testing efforts around the state. Some stakeholders of the Bristol Bay Salmon Fishery are putting together an effort to fund core management projects this summer in lieu of state budget cuts. Michael Link with the Bristol Bay Science and Research Institute says ADF&G's budget for the fishery has been reduced by about a third over 5 years, leaving industry and others to scramble to keep projects like the Togiak and Agushik counting towers up and avoid massive amounts of cost recovery fishing.
And that sort of piecemeal, last minute, you know, running around, put fast in the hat, precipitated this desire or this initiative to get together and figure out which programs are the most valuable, which ones are worth doing to benefit the management of the fishery and benefit the industry. Agree on that scope and then figure out how much money is needed.
Link says his collaborative effort will seek to raise $720,000 to keep all the necessary tools in place for an intensively managed fishery and avoid conservative practices by Fish and Game. So far, the processors and the BBRSDA have yet to commit to the requested $180,000 each. It's now looking likely that another El Niño will take shape by later this year. NOAA climate scientist Dan Collins said this week that there's a 50 to 55% chance that the much maligned warm ocean pattern will return.
It is unusual to go from El Niño, as we had two winters ago, to La Niña and then back to El Niño to some extent, but we don't have a very long historical record to compare to.
El Niño is blamed for the unusually warm winters between 2014 and 2016, which led to unusual wildlife patterns and fish run timing and a general lack of winter fun for many Alaskans. A sick eagle recovered by some children in Togiak Sunday died in the care of a rehabilitation center in Anchorage late Wednesday. Given the name Togiak, the bald eagle was flown from the village Monday, transited to Anchorage that afternoon, and by Wednesday appeared to be on the mend. But late that evening, Bird TLC coordinator Amy Kilshaw said he took a turn for the worse.
I heard some very strange sounds I've never really heard coming from an eagle. He was just in just having really hard time breathing, suffering. So we put him to sleep.
A post-mortem x-ray showed that Togiak had been hit with lead shot, and Kilshaw says died a slow and painful death from lead poisoning. And on Wednesday, dozens gathered to march around Dillingham for the annual Choose Respect campaign.
Choose respect!
My name is Deanna Beyer, and I am here to support this group in prevention of child sexual abuse and sexual assault and domestic violence. This turnout looks great. I think this is the biggest crowd that I've seen in a few years.
The annual march, started under the Parnell administration, seeks to end the epidemic of domestic violence and sexual assault in Alaska by raising awareness. More on this week's news can be found at our website, kdlg.org. Listening to KDLG's Bristol Bay and Beyond. I'm Dave Benninger. We'll start with some good news. There is funding to build the road between Dillingham and Manicotic. No, you know that's not true. Just a little early April Fool's Day there, and remember, keep your guard up tomorrow. Well, there's no funding yet for the up to $100 million project, but local opinions do seem to be softening to the idea of moving the project forward. Community meetings were held this week in Manicotic, Clark's Point, and Dillingham to talk about some of the findings from a recent survey and to gather more input. We'll have reaction from Manicotic Mayor Melvin Andrew in a moment, but first, here's some of what was heard at the meeting last night in Dillingham.
My name's Jackie Wander. I'm a civil engineer at Bristol Engineering Services Corporation. It's been interesting. We've received both people who are strongly, you know, agree with this project and people that don't want the road at all. So it's been mixed. The public survey, we actually had 155 people respond. And I think it was about 70% of the people said that they are in favor of the road.
Russell Phelps with Bristol Bay Native Corporation. I'm the natural resources manager. I'm all for it. I'm excited and I'd like to see it go through. And we're hoping that we could get some federal funding for the project.
Over 50% of respondents thought that berry harvesting, moose hunting, caribou hunting, and bird hunting would all have a positive impact that would come from the road, and that's mainly from increased access.
Patty Hyano. You know, I like the project. They had talked about it years ago, and I always thought it was a good project. You know, there's a lot of connections, you know, family, and then people in Manicotic having access to, you know, healthcare and the stores and everything. It makes sense to me.
On the other end of the spectrum, fishing was the biggest concern, both freshwater and salmon. 13% of respondents thought that that could be negatively impacted by the road.
Melody.
What's your last name?
Nybeck.
And how do you feel about the road project?
I don't have an opinion. This is my first meeting.
My name is Isaac Pearson. I am the project manager. Really, the biggest obstacle is the funding. Somebody needs to fund the road. So at this time, funding has not been identified for the road. One of the purposes of this study is to, one, lay out the different alternatives and the different routes that you could go, and it's also can be used as a mechanism to for the stakeholders to move forward with collecting funding from agencies.
We've come up with a list of economic considerations that the final report will include, but so far we have access to medical services, shopping, school, and church events, construction, maintenance, and patrol requirements on the road, employment opportunities, commercial fishing, subsistence activities, access to natural resources, and that includes gravel resources, timber, energy costs, recreational and tourism activities, and transportation and shipping costs.
Well, I guess I'm still thinking about it and don't have a clear opinion one way or the other. There are a lot of pros and cons, but certainly healthcare would be much less expensive, I think, for Manicotic. The number of people who get medevaced for, well, they need to be seen at the hospital, but it's an expensive and potentially dangerous way to get to Dillingham.
The survey also asked about travel preferences and travel demand for the potential road. And 70% of the total respondents said that they would increase the number of trips they made between the communities if there was a road there.
Alice Ruby? Well, I think the project's going along really well. It's strictly feasibility study. You can tell by looking at the costs that they're estimating that this isn't something that'll happen, you know, immediately or in the near future. But I'm real happy to hear that people are responding to the surveys because that'll make a difference in the future.
All right, so that was the Dillingham meeting last night. A busier meeting was held a few nights ago in Manicotic, which in years past has by and large opposed the Road to Dillingham project. That turned out not to be the case this time, as Mayor Melvin Andrew pointed out when I spoke with him earlier today. Mr. Mayor, good to speak with you, and thanks for making time again on this Friday. We know that in the past there's been a little bit more opposition to the idea of this spendy road between our two communities, but what say you following the meeting in your town this week?
Wednesday we had a public meeting during the evening, and I thought there'd be a little less people coming up since it was the last good day. To go out hunting or fishing and whatnot.
Right.
With all the good weather. But I think the same number of people showed up during the meeting, and I was surprised. But during the second public meeting, a lot more people were in favor of a road to Dillingham.
What were you hearing as the reason why? What has some of the opposition always been, but what are you hearing now that's different?
The opposition has mainly been toward access to alcohol and possibly drugs introduced into Manicotic. But I guess some of these things outweighed the negative. The cost of travel, the economic opportunity, that means jobs, access to jobs in Dillingham, and also getting goods like groceries and hardware, stuff like that.
We had two winters there where we were just barely connected, if at all, by Snowgo Trail, and now this year has been like a nice super highway between us there. How has that played into to the thinking of folks in Manicotic?
I don't think it influenced it that much since the first public hearing we had in reference to the road was right after two winters of no access to Dillingham by snow machine. But this year, a lot of people has been using the winter trail to make some errands down to Dillingham. And I was surprised that a lot more people were in favor of the road this time.
Have the views about alcohol in the community changed at all, Mayor?
No, they have not. They're still in fear that there'll be more access and easier access to alcohol and possibly drugs being introduced to Manicotic.
Finding the money for this seems almost a hoop dream of impossible dimensions. We're talking 50 to 100 million is the last figure that I heard. Do you know anything about the likelihood of this moving forward?
You're just in the same boat as I am, but impossibilities have made been possible before. Just recently, the annexation of Igusik, I thought that was impossible for us, but lo and behold, we got it. So I think, this won't happen right away or overnight. This will take some time, but I believe that sometime in the future, I'll be able to go visit you at KDLG.
We could do these interviews in person.
Oh, yeah.
Well, one more question while we have you on the phone there, Mayor, is with that annexation, I think you've got one more hurdle here with the legislature to cross, but do you anticipate bringing those portions of the Igusik Beach within your city limits and collecting some fish tax revenue this coming season?
Yes, I can comment on the legislature. To my knowledge, it has passed through the legislature, and we already have a severance tax ordinance with the city of Manicotic. The community passed a fish tax last October, if not in November, I forgot which one, but they passed it unanimously, and hopefully this summer we'll be starting to collect fish tax from Igusik Shore Fisheries.
That was quite the interesting public process to watch, and we hope that that scheme works out for your city to benefit, and we don't know what's going to come there down the road for Dillingham or a future borough. But Mayor Melvin Andrew, it's always good to speak with you, and thanks for offering some commentary about this possible road project.
Thank you very much. You have a good day. When I look back, your love was like the sun, and I don't remember any cold days. I just remember the warm sun. Breath along down the road, baby, you will accompany me.
Thanks for staying with us on this week's Bristol Bay and Beyond. As the state shakes out its pockets and checks the couch cushions for funds to help close an estimated $3 billion budget gap, schools continue to wrestle with their reduced funding. At the community level, some volunteers are showing that great youth programs can still be possible outside of the school and its limited funds. KDLG's Avery Lill sat in on a tech rehearsal for an upcoming dance recital in Dillingham that is happening along those lines.
A dozen elementary school girls join hands and run in a circle. In the center, the one boy in the Bristol Bay 4-H Ballet Club crouches. Then he springs, sticking out his tongue and reaching his hands high. It's a Mexican hat dance, and this is the tech rehearsal for the class's annual recital. In the real performances, the girls will wear long skirts, and August Ray, the boy in the center, will wear a large sombrero. The hat dance fits with the theme.
One, two, three.
We're dancing around the world!
The repertoire includes dances from as far away as India and a Yupik song from closer to home. The dancers giggle, turn one-handed cartwheels, and spin in circles, arms outstretched as they wait for their teachers to make decisions about lighting and stage choreography. 8-year-old Ray explains the energy among the dancers.
I'm really kind of scared and really psyched about it, and I really, really am looking forward to it.
Arwin Gaddis, Tina Ray, and Susie Jenkins Brito started the club 3 years ago. Jenkins Brito says that it grew out of a passion for dance that all share.
I grew up dancing ballet. I danced for going on more than 13 years, I suppose. And Tina grew up dancing her whole young adult life and her childhood. A couple years ago, a gal named Arwin lived here too, and she was also a lifelong dancer. And so the three of us got together and started the Bristol Bay 4-H Ballet Club.
And she says the community has responded well.
I think it's pretty popular. Lots of people are excited for the recital. It's so fun to see the girls and boys out in the community. Hi, Miss Susie. Hi, Miss Ashton. We're so excited for ballet. And so I think it's a really fun, positive thing.
The ballet club has developed over the years. They've added teachers, grown the program to 24 students, gained equipment, and incorporated more styles of dance. One of the most important moves they made from an organizational standpoint, says Jenkins Brito, was to become a 4-H charter after their first year.
And 4-H had a lot to offer us as far as funding, and then we were allowed to also collect tuition from students, which helped to fund recital costs. We were able to get some pretty fantastic costumes, some ballet mats for them to dance on, supplies to build bars, and so being a 4-H club has been really good for us.
It's a model she thinks is important, given the budget cuts that schools around the state have already made and likely face going forward. And knowing that reduced funding to schools can mean painful cuts to programs that students enjoy, but aren't strictly necessary to graduate high school.
Our community is built on volunteers. None of us are getting paid to do this. We do it because we love it. If we have deep budget cuts within our school board, with our state economy, I can't imagine that we're not going to and that we're not gonna feel the hurt from that. But I encourage people, if you have something that you wanna share, or if you just have a love of being with kids, start a club. It's fun. Like, we're gonna need it.
And fun is what's on the mind of these dancers.
And I like it because it just feels like I'm being athletic and having fun.
My name is Kara Tilden, and I'm in third grade.
What is your favorite move to do?
A grand jeté. It's when you have to jump in the air and put both of your legs out.
My name is Trisha May Buholm, and I'm 7. I like about it because you get to have break times, and one time we had 4 hours of ballet.
The dance recital will be held tomorrow in the Dillingham Elementary School gym. In Dillingham, I'm Avery Lill.
Sitka Sound finished their spring herring season this week after the fleet hauled in 14,600 tons. Some of those tenders will start to steam our direction in anticipation of the Togiak herring fishery and its 23,000-ton harvest awaits, where its harvest awaits. Started last year record early with first spawn spotted accidentally on April 14th. Asked area management biologist Tim Sands, fresh back from a sabbatical with the family, to drop by and offer the latest. Tim, welcome back to the studios. You guys have been on a long road trip.
We are back and ready to get back to work managing the fisheries.
And management is something that you will be doing here in the next, roughly 2-month period of time, because there's funding back for state management of the largest herring fishery in the state.
That's correct. We have a budget of $61,000 now, so that's going to give us money to do aerial surveys and money to do the sampling that we need to do to build our model. We use an age-structured model, and in order for that model to work, you have to have information on the age and size of the fish that are harvested. Typically do about 5,000 samples a year. And last year we had no money for that at all, and the only money we had for aerial surveys was money that the processors donated to us, basically.
So on the research side and for future management, this is important, this is key.
This is very key, because without the information, we can't forecast the next year's return, and that makes us have to be much more conservative. The quota this year is down in large part because we had no data to work
from
with
last year,
and so we had to come up with a new way of forecasting because we couldn't use our model. You know, previously we used our age structure model, and we would use based on that we could do a forecast. And since we didn't have that data, I think we took the average over the last, since the 80s or something, the last 30 years of the average return, and that was what we came up with for a number.
Down by 10% or something.
Yeah, it was certainly less than, which you'd expect it to be less than what you were doing, because you don't have any new data.
Okay.
So you can't make it go higher without data. You can only make it go lower.
Okay. The exploitation, some 26,000 tons to be taken, is still very large, much larger than Sitka Sound, which is underway this week.
Right.
What's our participation this year?
Well, I just talked to processors yesterday and the day before, and it looks like we're going to have, I think, 19 seine boats and 16 gill netters. So we're going to have
16.
Last year we only had 3 gill netters, so we're going to have 16 gill netters. I'm hearing rumors of $100 to $150 a ton. So the price is back up, and that's bringing gillnetters back into the fishery and making it so that it's more of a viable option for folks.
That's good news.
That is good news.
Next tricky part will be timing. Last year was a record early run by a substantial number of days. I think 10 was the official count or something. And right. only spotted in time because somebody happened to be out keeping a close eye because Fish and Game's management had been cut. We are looking, you folks are looking at the sea surface temperatures out in the Pribilofs and those areas. What's been brought to my attention is they're not that much different right now than they were last year, but we have more sea ice along the coast than we did. What do you know?
Well, our research guy in Anchorage, Greg Buck, he has a couple different models, and one of them was based on sea ice coverage. And that one, like you say, is similar to last year because it's the offshore extent of sea ice. And there's lots of sea ice inshore, but not so much offshore. So that model didn't really work out to project much. But the sea surface temperature model it's actually at Unalaska, that model is projecting that we should see fish May 4th and first spawn May 5th. So, you know, somewhere in that first week of May, maybe late first week, early second week of May, we should maybe have a fishery. That being said, that's what the model projects. But what happens between now and then temperature-wise can shift that probably a week either way. So if we keep having these cold nights with minus temperatures, that's going to make ice and not get rid of ice. If we have some big storms from the south that blow in warmer water and break up the ice, that could move things earlier.
I would suspect Fish and Game and the fleet and the processors will be ready for an early start after last year being caught so flat-footed there, but May sounds probably a lot better for most of the industry.
Yeah, May is probably better, especially with, you know, people needing to bring barges in to bring equipment and fiber and whatever. If the barges can't get here, that really hurts their ability to get things ready, and that's a critical part of the whole deal is being able to process the fish that are harvested.
Right. One more question. I know it's not Fish and Game's wheelhouse to worry too much about this, but do you have any sense of how the market looks this year?
I've talked to one processor, and they were thinking 100 to 150. I know you heard that separately, although somebody from the same processor. But then there was an article that said that there's 10% more Kozunoko. Kozunoko is one of the product forms of herring roe. 10% more carryover in Japan than there has been. So they're still at kind of historic high levels of herring roe.
We'll have more to talk about when we get closer to the fishery, which on last year's calendar could be a few short weeks away, but more likely six or so here, according to recent sea surface temperature looks. Tim Sands, area management biologist, back in the office and willing to take your calls and in-person visits. And thanks for coming by as always.
All right. Well, thanks for having me, Dave. And yeah, absolutely. Come by just to visit, or if you have some big pressing question, I'm here.
And that's it for this week's show. You can find this and past episodes of Bristol Bay and Beyond at our website, kdlg.org. We'd like your feedback, story ideas, songs, poems, and or an essay. Send an email anytime to dave@kdlg.org or give us a call here at the station. My thanks to Lawrence Hamilton and Avery Lill for their help this week. I'm Dave Benninger. Hope to see you back here next Friday.
Support for KDLG comes from Silver Bay Seafoods, a fisherman-owned integrated processor of salmon for domestic and export markets. Job opportunities and more at silverbayseafoods.com.